Ian Malcolm is a mathematician specializing in chaos theory. Quite amusing and personable, but basically what he does, besides wear black, is use computers to model the behavior of complex systems. And John Hammond loves the latest scientific fad, so he asked Malcolm to model the system at Jurassic Park, which Malcolm did. Malcolm's models are all face space shapes on a computer screen. Have you seen them? No, Gennaro said. Well, they look like a weird, twisted ship's propeller. According to Malcolm, the behavior of any system follows the surface of the propeller. You with me? Not exactly, Gennaro said. Arnold held his hand in the air. Let's say I put a drop of water on the back of my hand. That drop is going to run off my hand. Maybe it'll run toward my wrist. Maybe it'll run toward my thumb, or down between my fingers. I don't know for sure where it will go, but I know it will run somewhere along the surface of my hand. It has to. Okay, Gennaro said. Chaos theory treats the behavior of a whole system like a drop of water moving on a complicated propeller surface. The drop may spiral down or slip outward toward the edge. It may do many different things, depending, but it will always move along the surface of the propeller. Okay. Malcolm's models tend to have a ledge or a sharp incline where the drop of water will speed up greatly. He modestly calls this speeding up movement the Malcolm effect. The whole system could suddenly collapse. And that was what he said about Jurassic Park, that it had inherent instability. Inherent instability, Gennaro said. And what did you do when you got his report? We disagreed with it and ignored it, of course, Arnold said. Was that wise? It's self-evident, Arnold said. We're dealing with living systems, after all. This is life, not computer models. In the harsh quartz lights, the hypsilophodont's green head hung down out of the sling, the tongue dangling, the eyes dull. Careful! Careful! Hammond shouted as the crane began to lift. Harding grunted and eased the head back onto the leather straps. He didn't want to impede circulation through the carotid artery. The crane hissed as it lifted the animal into the air onto the waiting flatbed truck. The Hipsy was a small dryosaur, 7 feet long, weighing about 500 pounds. She was dark green, with mottled brown spots. She was breathing slowly, but she seemed all right. Harding had shot her a few minutes before with a tranquilizer gun, and apparently he had guessed the correct dose. There was always a tense moment dosing these big animals. Too little and they would run off into the forest, collapsing where you couldn't get to them. Too much and they went into terminal cardiac arrest. This one had taken a single bounding leap and keeled over, perfectly dosed.
Watch it! Easy!
Hammond was shouting to the workman.
Mr. Hammond, Harding said, please.
Well, they should be careful.
They are being careful, Harding said.
He climbed up onto the back of the flatbed as the Hipsy came down, and he set her into the restraining harness. Harding slipped on the cardiogram collar that monitored heartbeat, then picked up the big electronic thermometer the size of a turkey baster and slipped it into the rectum. It beeped, 96.2 degrees.
How is she?
Hammond asked fretfully.
She's fine, Harding said. She's only dropped a degree and a half.
That's too much, Hammond said. Too deep.
You don't want her waking up and jumping off the truck, Harding snapped.
Before coming to the park, Harding had been the chief of veterinary medicine at the San Diego Zoo and the world's leading expert on avian care. He flew all over the world, consulting with zoos in Europe, India, and Japan on the care of exotic birds. He'd had no interest when this peculiar little man showed up, offering him a position in a private game park. But when he learned what Hammond had done, it was impossible to pass up. Harding had an academic bent, and the prospect of writing the first textbook of veterinary internal medicine, Diseases of Dinosauria, was compelling. In the late 20th century, veterinary medicine was scientifically advanced. The best zoos ran clinics little different from hospitals. New textbooks were merely refinements of old. For a world-class practitioner, there were no worlds left to conquer. But to be the first to care for a whole new class of animals? That was something. And Harding had never regretted his decision. He had developed considerable expertise with these animals, and he didn't want to hear from Hammond now.
The Hipsy snorted and twitched. She was still breathing shallowly. There was no ocular reflex yet, but it was time to get moving.
All aboard, Harding shouted. Let's get this girl back to her paddock.